They are from Loveland, Ohio. And shortly before we had announced our name as Pulse, they had announced a program in Loveland for Pulse. I don't know exactly what your program
is. Actually, it was a private citizen. I'm actually a former councilman. And she and I were developing an online blog called the Loveland Pulse. And shortly, about a month or two after we registered everything, we received an email from Lindsay, and that set the everything in motion, so that I'm happy to see that it's being used nicely.
How threatening was the email?
Also, part of the sale, $500 went to a nonprofit in town, which was the what is called Life, which is a food pantry for the city of Loveland.
Oh, very nice.
Very appreciative.
Well, we have appreciated you working with us, and we appreciate you getting here. All right. So, to other citizen here, if you have an agenda.
I do.
Okay, so the citizens report procedures are on the back of this, but in summary, audience members may address the LCAB on any topic that is relevant to the commission. Are you familiar?
Yes.
Okay, but I don't need to read.
Yeah, no, you don't.
All right. Okay, then.
Do you have something you would like to address?
Okay.
So, greeting all. I'm Bruce Corsett, recent member of Transportation Advisory Board, now a member of Affordable Housing, and why I'm here now is a tax issue that City Council has put on the November ballot, the 0.5 mil tax broken up into two for eight city facilities improvements or projects. As you're all aware, once the city puts some issue before the citizens for a vote, they have to go quiet. So I and a couple other people, I won't mention any names, Ralph.
That's a lot.
formed an issue committee called Invest in Loveland. The group that spent 2 years studying what eight projects should be on the tax issue reconstituted many of them, and they created an issue committee called Yes on 2A and 2B. So as you're driving around town now, you will see some Yes on 2A and 2B signs. And if you read the senior voice in the latest month's issue, our committee, which is called Invest in Loveland, has an ad. And we're going to have one in the North 40 News in the next week. And on the 20th of the month, which will be the Sunday paper and the Reporter Herald, we will have that ad again. And on that ad, we hope to have a bunch of names of organizations and city citizens who think it's a good idea. We think that these are important projects to make Loveland even a better place than it already is. So it's been my pleasure to desperately attend as many of these committees and commissions, boards and commissions, to see how everybody goes and see what kind of geedunks they get compared to what I get at mine. So,
is our food better, Chris?
Yeah, you guys look like you're doing pretty good. So it's cost us about $700 so far to make these two buys, and I'm thinking it's going to be another $700 or so for the paper of record. And So since you guys are on city boards and commissions, you obviously have already invested in Loveland. And the commission can't take a stance, but people on the commission can. So I'm just going to pass this ad around, and you can see what's going on there. And if anybody feels flush and would like to help us out a little bit, I've got some little forms here. I'll take your money right off the bat, or you can send it in. And that's the extent of my presentation. I thank you very much for your ears and your consideration in supporting this issue that makes Loveland the wonderful town that it would be.
Thank you. Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you for being here and talking.
Thanks, Bruce. So, any questions for Bruce?
Anybody want one of these?
All right, I think we are ready to move on to staff reports then. I don't believe there's anything we need to decide on today. I think it's mostly reported. So we'll start with the fiber hut installation update from Kim.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Kim.
I just wanted to give you a nice update on our huts. I think we have a couple of slides with trailers.
Yes, I'm looking for it. Sorry. There we go.
So last week I went out to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It was cold and rainy. I was told it was going to be 90 and sunny. Went out there for a day. The company that we purchased the huts from, we're working on them, getting them ready to come out here. So. Went out there with Itesco, our consultant, and we did some as-building on the building and just final verifications to make sure that our design matches what we're actually getting. So we went through the building pretty thoroughly and were able to confirm that our design is going to work, and I'm pretty comfortable with the quality of the building, so I'm pretty happy about those. So I think there's the next slide. There's a So this yard is pretty cool. They have a lot of buildings here, but we're the darker colored one here. And we have one, it'll actually be here tomorrow morning. Kind of messed up on the weather, I guess, but it was already headed this way, so it's coming. It'll be offloaded at a crane yard, and all the buildings will come to that crane yard, and when we're ready, they'll come here. So the first one will be at the service center back here in the back parking lot. And we had scheduled to start this week, and we actually had some locate issues, so I had to move the building a little bit. So with the weather coming in, plan to start next week. So that will be coming in by the end of the month. We should have the building in. So our first one will be in, and then by the end of the year, we should have the other four getting ready. So.
Oh, awesome. All right. So in those fiber huts, I know we've talked about this before, but what's specifically going to be housed in these huts?
So it'll be all of our server equipment. I don't know, Bree, you might go further into detail.
Routers and...
Yeah, so it'll be all the fiber will come in through a vault on the outside into the side of the building, and then it'll be routed through racking to all the servers inside, and then we'll have our battery backup, our DC battery, so which is fairly large. I think we have two racks of batteries, so it takes up quite a bit of space. So I think we've sized these appropriately for a little bit of future expansion too. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, mostly the OLT, so all of the laser equipment for transmittal, and then all of the servers that route and store information for all the different software programs that we're going to have to run.
And that first one's installed right here at the BMW building.
So these will be the go-betweens between the head-end equipment and the premise equipment.
This is the head-end equipment.
So there's not like a network operations center where there's more stuff?
There is a network operations center that as well, but that is mostly like a control center. Okay. It's not where the actual server
So it's more of a management hub thing. So... Mm-hmm. It's a more distributed network as far as the not just the routing but also servers.
Yes.
Cool. Did we get a field trip?
We're hoping.
You want to go to Iowa?
Wait until it depends on the weather.
Yeah, if it's 90 and sunny, you'll go.
How much flexibility will we have to move these things in the future? Is, you know, sure. Once you've chosen the location, there's obviously a lot of wiring, cabling, and everything that goes in place. Is that the fixed location that we anticipate to be permanent?
We do. We don't foresee anything. If anything, it would be another building put somewhere, so it would be a new building put somewhere. So these locations have been pretty well thought out by our engineering team, and they're spread pretty far apart to make our network work. But yeah, I think in the future, if we need additional, then we would, I don't see us ever moving these.
If we had to replace this, we'd have to set, we would have to like set a new one and then do a swap between one to the other type of thing.
Right.
All the other locations are like substations, so those are a little more permanent. This one, we had a little bit more work to do with our facilities department to make sure that the long-term plan for this campus would not impact the location that is being chosen, because this building here does need to grow over time to accommodate growth for the water and power department, partially because of pulse, partially because of just more staff. And so making sure that this campus has room for growth and this doesn't have to be moved.
Yeah, that was part of that with your question. We looked at trying to put it out maybe in some of the green space and get it out of the way, but with the future building kind of design, we didn't want to be right in the middle of mm-hmm. where something else needed to go. So we found a spot back there that isn't used really for, the parking isn't really used, and it doesn't impact the parking lot for this reason.
Can you comment at all on like weather resistance, security, sturdiness?
Sure. Yeah, so these are precast buildings. They're a 4-inch concrete wall, 8-inch roof. The door is, it's rated for bullet resistance, but it does have a locking mechanism, electronic locking mechanism, and manual on it. So there's no other openings besides, so we have the two HVACs, and then there's, you can kind of see it on this picture. They're the duct terminators, so plastic terminators where the pipes can come in. So there's one of those on the side over there. So security-wise, I mean, you'd have to work really hard to get in these. And then weather-wise, with the that's why we decided to go with the concrete, was for the weatherproofing on them and the structural capability of wind resistance. I mean, they're rated for 135 mile an hour gusts.
Right.
And we actually are putting them on a concrete foundation, and we will attach them to the foundation. So.
Right.
And the other, they're in secure facilities addition to that.
Yeah, so in addition to that, we're behind fences at everywhere except for one of the substations. We are out front, but it will have camera security on it. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Robotic machine guns, too.
Yeah. I had told Bree we should energize the doors.
All it takes is a phone call, by.
They're just up in Fort Collins. So it's easy.
So how resistant is the material for the cables going in and out from the outside there? Or is that?
As far as?
Is there any vulnerability? Or are all the cables coming down through the ground?
So our current design, actually, we have the conduit routed through the floor, through the foundation, into the building.
That's
so we're not actually using the duct terminators on the outside, but they could be used in the future. So that's why we wanted to keep it there. So if we felt there was some sort of security issue, that we could plate it. But it's still precast concrete with little holes in it. So you'd have to have, chisel and hammer, and it would take a lot to get in through that, and it's up higher, so I think it would be pretty apparent if somebody was trying to get into these that way.
Mm-hmm. You said there's four of these
there's
spread
five.
Out five across the entire community.
Yes.
And what's the unit cost on these things?
On the building itself,
yeah.
Or full installation?
Just the building.
Okay, so our building, we came in at $680,000 for all of them, but that includes all. Yeah, for all of them.
Oh, okay.
All of them. And that includes the internal racking, power equipment.
Installation.
HVAC. Yeah, installation. Yeah, HVAC. So everything you see here, plus all the internal components that Nokia is not providing.
Great. It's nice to see what they're going to look like. I had all these imaginings in my head, and now.
Sure.
I kind of
filled in the blank, but thank you.
Sure.
All right, any other questions? Kim? All right, thank you, Kim.
Thanks.
All right, so up next is Ryan to talk about the kickoff meetings.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan. So we had two kickoff meetings back to back. One, the first one was Nokia, which covers all the active equipment inside those sheds. We've already talked about that to a certain extent, but it was really an intense two-day meeting where we talked about the implementation, you know, how the system's going to look, integration, stuff like that. So we had a good time with Nokia, and that's a picture of them right there. So the second one was GLDS, which is our...
Oops, sorry.
Oops.
Thanks, Ryan.
I thought there were two pages of it. I apologize.
GLDS is our billing and provisioning system, so it handles basically all the, you know, not only the billing and getting the bills out, but also the provisioning of the equipment to the home back to the OLT inside the house. So it monitors outages, you know, all sorts of other things that it monitors along the way, but it's one of the many servers that will be inside the hut. And that was the second week, and that was 3 days, I believe, three-day kickoff on that one. So pretty intense 2 weeks, but we're rocking and rolling with both projects.
So these were really discovery meetings, so they were able to meet with a variety of different staff. So Ryan is project managing these pieces for our project and brought in different teams from finance and utility billing and all over the city in order to make sure that we were able to get their questions answered and they can go back and start doing the configuration pieces now in anticipation that we'll have turn on next year.
Yep. And the finance staff behave themselves?
No. But, you know, what can you expect from that group, right?
Bunch of troublemakers.
Yeah. They are troublemakers. No, it was really great. So we had John Beckstrom in second behind us right now, as well as some of the folks from the...
Utility billing.
Yeah, utility billing and budgeting and taxes and all different sorts of people. So it was really, really productive.
Yeah.
2 days.
All right.
Any questions?
You see the name Nokia instills a lot of confidence. You know who they are. Tell us a little bit about GLDS.
GLDS is an OSSBSS system, so they're basically your custom-made as a billing system and a operations support system.
I guess what I'm looking for is more about, you know, number of customers, you know, revenues, how big they are, how long they've been around, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah, they're out of California. I believe they're over 800 customers worldwide, specializing in fiber, or communications rather, so. And revenue, I have to do some research on that to see what their yearly revenue is. But they're well known in the fiber markets, for sure. They specialize in the OSSBSS systems, which is kind of unique to this business. And upon research, you know, there's only four or five companies out there that do that.
Okay,
in the United States.
And these are the biggest, one of the biggest?
This is one of the biggest,
okay.
Yeah. This is pretty well-known name. They've been in business for 40-something years.
Okay.
So, yeah, they've been around for a while. They started with copper and, you know, telecom back in the day. So,
their niche market is kind of medium-sized utilities like ours. So they're not going after, like, the big companies like Comcast or CenturyLink, those big or national level companies, but companies that are like us. So
yeah.
Small telecoms, municipal, REAs.
REAs, yep. European, they're in the European market as well, so.
Mm-hmm. South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa, stuff like that. So they do deal, you know, mainly with people like us.
Yeah. You know, the confidence that I got probably more than anything else is that they've been around for 40 years.
Yeah.
So many new startup software companies have been around for 6 months or 40 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, and you worry about, you know, their potential longevity. So that's that's my concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we made sure they were a name in the market.
Okay.
This is the company that Longmont does use as well. So we were able to do a lot of research with Longmont.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, multiple trips down to Longmont to see how they use their system and some of the, you know, the pros and cons of, you know, what they went through when they stood it up. So lessons learned, and we took them back here. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're
welcome. Okay, so I just heard the key phrase, lessons learned. You had a lot of different people around the table for both Nokia and GLDS.
Sorry.
Are there a couple of, you know, surprises, good or bad, from the experience that you can share?
Not really surprises. I mean, we kind of, you know, we've been working at this for many months before the kickoffs, through contracting and through negotiations, stuff like that, and, as well as multiple customer testimonies up there, you know, up there. So
I think there was a lot of really good discussion with UB,
yeah,
utility billing, and some of the process, the processes, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was more process, and you know, more of, are we missing something on, you know, and it wasn't really a surprise, but are we missing something on you know, some of the billing stuff, some of the accounting stuff, you know. And so we just went through all that, but it wasn't, you know, it was like a glaring, you know, omission or anything that was missed during the vetting of the process.
Some of the things that we've done differently than the city of Longmont, we had elected to do a few more of the modules that GLDS offers that will allow our customers to have a better experience overall.
Yeah.
Like a web portal, that's something that Longmont hadn't offered.
Mobile workforce management.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we, yeah, if you were to contrast to Longmont, yeah, we bought pretty much the entire suite of tools from mobile workforce management back to the CSRs, back to, you know, the database itself, which holds all the records. So, you know, again, we learned from Longmont's mistakes and what they're having to do afterwards. So we do have the field site covered. We have tablets in the field where people are going to, you know, sign their names as an installation crew comes and installs into their house. All that's going to be electronic, as well as dispatching crews to the next region that they're going to work in, and all that's being figured out now. So, you know, again, nothing major. It was more of a task. You know, we need to figure out what operating areas these crews are going to work in so they're not driving, you know, wasting gas, stuff like that. So we did some different analysis, different discussions about workflows, and ultimately just came up with, you know, good solid workflows, I believe. So
there's like that they went through and presented, like, you can do it this way, this way, or this way. Here are the options, pros and cons for each. Which way would you like to go?
Yeah.
And
okay,
if we could answer that question there based on our internal processes, that was fine. If we needed to go back and touch in with a couple, with somebody else that wasn't present at the meeting, we had, you know, a time frame in which we had to do that. And so then we set up the schedule was finalized on when different things needed to be done.
Yeah, we've had weekly calls with these companies, you know, leading up and since, you know, for months. So the expectations were there.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So on those expectations, did you have a short list of, you know, actions and issues that you wanted resolved during these sessions, or was it just walk in, let's see what happens?
I don't think it was a short list. I think it was a pretty long list.
Yeah.
All right.
We had agendas for both, but then we going through the agenda and through the exercise, we came out with action item lists for
okay.
both.
Are you starting to talk about long-term product?
That was
portfolio.
That was brought up.
Yeah, we do have a time frame in which we need to have that settled. We are working on a marketing study, and we can certainly have Lindsay talk a little bit about that. But to get a feel for what the market is currently, what our competitors are doing, what our neighbors are doing, and making sure that we're crafting those product offerings and packages correctly for our community, that is in process right now, so that we anticipate that being finished next year.
What What's been Longmont's success with their level 3 product? How's that been received?
They are no longer have a partnership.
Okay, so they don't sell that anymore?
No.
What are they doing for video?
They don't have any product.
They've gotten out of that.
Wow. They just do talk.
Welcome to the world of streaming.
No. Was it solely due to subscription numbers or just?
Mm-mm. The reason I asked the question is I'd heard that the delivery component was really sketchy. So maybe that, and that's just what I heard. It has nothing, no ramifications on that, but I heard from several people in Longmont that I know, a couple that signed up for it and then turned it back in because they were having, you know, the signals were cutting out and things like that. And unless the fiber, unless somebody's digging in the yard, the fiber's not going to cut out.
Yeah,
you know where the problem is.
Yeah.
So there were a couple of different things with the level 3. So they had a co-marketing agreement. They never actually sold the services on behalf of level 3. So there was there wasn't a true partnership in a way that you would imagine, like maybe Dish Network and AT&T or something like that. They worked that. But so there was that piece, and then there was also some concern about franchise payments from Comcast and some others. And then there was also T-Mobile purchased that company, and so there was a change in strategy from level 3 as well. So there were a number of things that happened in the marketplace, and they just decided to cut part ways. You can still purchase the service.
It's a streaming.
It's a streaming service, and it's a separate service, so you can have a separate bill for it. But
You said the Longmont was worried about their franchise fees?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are you equating into the whole concept the fact that maybe our franchise fees are not going to be what they used to be based on current legislation?
No, whether or not they needed to pay franchise fees, if level 3 needed to pay franchise fees as an over-the-top provider, and what that true relationship was with the co-marketing agreement. And then there was also just some concern about just the dwindling number of subscribers, period, through streaming services and the franchise fees that come off of that in general.
Well, I think streaming services are exploding, but you're talking about that specific streaming mm-hmm. service.
Yes.
I think it's really important that you guys stay on top of the changing landscape with franchise fees from the cable providers, because now they're going to start back billing you for the delivery of your peg channels. It's mm-hmm. a complicated mess. I'll keep stuff coming at you that I see.
Well, we appreciate that. We have a meeting actually tomorrow that some of our attorneys are going to be going to with CCUA, so that's...
That's bound to be a topic.
It is a topic on that, so I'm sure we'll get some topics on
it. You know, at the end of the line, your franchise fees may be be considerably less than they've been before, which might make it more attractive just to say, oh, well, thank you anyway.
So something I've noticed with Comcast in the last month, you'll remember maybe like 4 or 5 months ago that I saw that Comcast dropped their gigabit price to $70 and then they bounced it back up to $160. They have now again dropped it to $70 and are holding it at $70. It's gigabit down and 35 megs up, but you know, that's
like for residential only.
For residential only, but it's a 70%, 60% drop in price.
Contract. Is it contract?
Yeah, it's a one year agreement and price guaranteed for two.
When are you going live in my neighborhood?
my speeds were bumped up 15 megs too, just without any requests. It just happened. You know,
so they're definitely responding to the fact that this is happening by aggressively dropping prices and increasing speeds.
We send out a thank you.
I think you should write to the Reporter Herald and tell the public that this is all because of you guys.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think Comcast is responding to our competition.
Yeah.
I've got a couple pretty specific questions about GLDS.
Sure.
Billing integration. Are we going to, as individual customers of services from the utilities department, going to get a single consolidated bill, or is it something that we're going to get separate bills for?
You'll get separate bills.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be online payable, though.
It will. Yeah. There's gonna
if
be.
If it's not, I'm just kicking your butt, man.
Yeah. With the GLDS
platform.
One of
those modules we bought.
Yeah, there's two web portals. One to sign up for your account, and one to manage your account after you sign up and change. You know, again, if you want to change something, speed or television lineup, something like that, you could manage your account with that one. So.
Was it too technically difficult to do the integrated billing and pass the transactions over?
Yeah, I mean.
There's actually a much different reason for that. I think technically it probably could have been done, but you have to remember that the way we handle water and power handles public life and safety utilities in terms of turn-ons, turn-offs, billings, delinquencies, and so on is vastly different than how it's going to be handled under PULTS. And that was one of the main drivers as well.
Yeah. But you got the integrated billing not just for what you guys have, but you also have it for trash collection,
yes, sir.
Recycling.
Yes.
Yeah.
The new CIS system will handle all of the utilities that are provided by the city. Stormwater, trash, water, wastewater, power.
So that software system is actually being worked on and being stood up right now.
Right
so
now,
in the
I know,
of
yes.
The
so that's the replacement. So there is an expectation, not now, immediately, to have rollout, but somewhere down the road we'll have more integrated billing?
I would think not. Again, based on the vast degree of differences between this is a voluntary service, that is not necessarily one. This is life safety, this is not necessarily life safety. So the different parts of the municipal, it will be handled through different parts of the municipal code.
Okay. It's possible that in 10 years that there are other options on the table, but right now the two systems will be separate, at least for the short.
And I think there's some really good reasons. I will say I've seen some of the mock-ups of the CIS system and the customer integration from the portal, from online. Unbelievable. Great power. A lot more functionality, a lot more understanding your bills. You can overlay rainfall, you can overlay temperature, and you'll be able to track and see how your utility changes as the rain.
Water usage geeks.
It's yes, yeah, it's very powerful.
Nerding out on the billing system.
Very powerful. Very powerful.
Yeah. So you said there's there's a portal for signing up and then a different portal for billing. You may want to be very
for signing up and then managing.
Just and then managing
your account. Yeah.
You may want to make sure about clarity of that handoff, because at UNC we have a similar thing where there's an application portal and then a student portal, and depending on what you name one or the other or label one or the other, people think they're done or
yeah. Once they're signed up, they won't be able to get back into a sign up portal unless they wanted to cancel their service.
So they create a username for that one?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And just to clarify, they're two separate modules that you buy from GLDS, but to the customer, the experience is the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we bought a module that allows them to sign up online versus having to call in.
And then it just ports that username over.
Yeah.
Single
customer database.
Yeah. 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 Once they sign up, they're going to automatically be in that maintenance mode. They'll be automatically kicked to maintenance, maintain their account. So.
Yeah. And you'll have the ability to shut off web traffic without shutting off the phone service?
We're working on that. It was one of the discussions
Joe's talking about, life safety type stuff. Because the phone service doesn't have just one component to it, because if you've got a senior with one of those fobs around their neck talking to a PULTS integrated phone piece, you might shut off their bill. It might shut off their web traffic if they don't pay their bill, but you don't want to shut that portion.
So we talked a lot about soft disconnects and hard disconnects, and when do you trigger one versus the other, and there's going to be some, when we talked last month about some of the items that will need to go into the change to our municipal code to accommodate the delivery of services, that's one of those items. And so our utility billing, along with Ryan, are making some decisions about what does that look like, what are the time windows based on what we historically have seen for, needing to have payments. And
you can do soft disconnects that just limit bandwidth, so that the Med Alert or phone will still work, but they can't stream in.
Right, they get 64K up and down. Mm-hmm.
Can't stream or search the web.
Yeah, yeah.
Just turn on a dial tone.
It'll kick back to the old days of the
family.
Yeah.
You've got things.
We did discuss that.
Other questions for Ryan?
One more. Being the the dedicated bean counter geek here. Pricing model for the software for GLDS, because that's going to be an ongoing thing. You talked about purchase, but is there a subscription model, your maintenance costs associated with it, those kind of things?
Yeah, we did purchase with a yearly support for the first year, and then we'll continue that yearly support for the second, you know, as long as we want to keep it.
What portion of the whole cost is the annual support?
It's 25%, or 20%.
It's like 20%
something.
20% is pretty normal.
Yeah,
and it's something that we did budget for, so it was included in our ongoing budget for in our maintenance line items for the subscription fees. So we did have the capital cost for purchase of the software and then the maintenance. And they did come in, they came in very close to where we expected our budget. So we did a pretty good job ballparking that one. It's pretty
accurate. Yeah, and they're just, I mean, most maintenance is like 18%. It's what I've seen out in the market quite a bit. But they give a little bit more for their, because it is a maintenance and a support package as well. So they, you know, they do handhold through upgrades, stuff like that, included in that. So it's not additional cost in the future. So it's a pretty nice support package.
Do we have to purchase upgrades as they come through, or are they kind of as part of the?
As part of the support, yeah. Please.
Good. Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Other questions for Ryan?
All right.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for coming.
Take care, folks. Travel safe.